From the prophet Isaiah, "For a child has been born to us, a son given to us. Authority rests upon his shoulders, and he is named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace." Isaiah 9:6-7. From the Gospel of John, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give to you. I do not give to you as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled, and do not let them be afraid." John 14:27.
So good morning. Yes, my name's Cherie, and I like to introduce myself as Tim being my husband, not the other way around. So we're thinking a bit about Christmas. We're thinking about particularly peace at Christmas. So I thought we would start with a video clip of the most popular Christmas adverts this year. Yes, adverts are in a top 10, and these are the four most popular at the moment. So when we watch it in just a second, I want you to think about, what are they selling? Is it a product? Is it a feeling? Sorry, is it a feeling? Or is it something else? Okay, hopefully it'll work.
Oh, you better watch out. Better not cry.
Oh, wow.
I'm telling
you did this.
Well,
you've got the job.
You mean I can stay?
Sure.
Great job, everybody.
Oh, son of a nutcracker.
But the prettiest sight to see is the holly that will be on your own front.
Hey, Ellie.
Hi.
Oh, yeah. Let's get a bit too.
You want to come in? It's cool.
So they're the four most popular. How many of you had already seen them? Quite a few of you. So we've seen a few already. Brilliant. Okay, so maybe just think about those questions. What were they selling? What's the product? Is it a feeling or is it something else? Is Christmas a peaceful time for you? I would guess that maybe it's not, especially if you're the main person who makes Christmas happen for your family and friends. Quite honestly, I'm not sure why we hear so much about Father Christmas, because in most households, it's the mothers or the women who do all of the Christmas jobs. Now, I know some men are fantastic and they do all the Christmas jobs, but quite honestly, most of the time, it's us women who buy the cards, who write the cards, who sort and buy the presents, who sort the food, who contact the relatives, who wrap the presents, etc., etc. So I actually think it's a fraudulent description to talk of the real workers of Christmas as being Father Christmas and his elves. I think it should actually be Mother Christmas at the least. But before I upset lots of people, I will move on. However, I'm probably getting as many supporters as people I'm annoying, who those supporters probably know what I'm talking about. So Christmas is often a crazy busy season. We find ourselves on this strange topic of peace. I often think it's a bit mad that it's even part of the four things, because often it's a very stressful time. Obviously, it's busy and stressful for the Christmas makers, whoever they are in your household, who make it a lovely time for your family and friends. But it's stressful in other ways. There's massive pressure to, you've got enough money, to make sure you've got the right number of gifts for everyone, to make sure that no one is left out. There's also the pressure of buying the same level of gift as that you're given. You don't want to be embarrassing yourself by giving too little in return, but you also don't want to embarrass the people you're giving presents by giving them too much. Maybe you've got questions like this going around in your head. Or can I actually get away with wearing last year's Christmas jumper again? Or maybe you've got things in your head while you're standing there saying, I must not forget to ... this morning. And of course, there's another level of pressure if you're a parent. You have the pressure to make sure you've got the right gift, the one that everybody has got. I don't know if any of you saw the film that was out last year. It was a British film by Stephen Merchant called Click and Collect. And if you haven't, it's quite a good story. It's quite a good British-made film. But the whole sort of story is basically based on the fact that the dad has been asked to do one job at Christmas, and that is to buy the present for his daughter. He obviously tells his wife that he has done this and forgets about it. And then eventually, when he does remember, that being the most popular toy is completely sold out. And then you watch the whole film follows him trying to get this precious toy to save Christmas. And it's quite a funny story. So I think some of us can relate to that a bit. And there's also the pressure of connecting with wider family. And it's meant to be a wonderful time together. And of course, sometimes it is a lovely time and it does work out. But for many people, there's a reason that we don't spend a lot of time with our wider family throughout the year. It could, of course, just be that you're far away and lots of families due to work are separated by many miles these days. But it could also be that actually family relationships are a bit difficult. And the thought of having everybody together might give you a knot in your stomach when you think about it. But you think you've got to make them come to your house and feel welcome or go to theirs, because after all, it's Christmas. So either way, through lots of travelling or different difficult relationship, it's another pressure when getting together. And it's not always like the adverts. It's not always lots of fun and lots of food. And it's not always a lovely time, but sometimes it is. There seems this great pressure on all of us to create a magical Christmas. And it's a bit unrealistic, really, especially for those of us who aren't coping well, either financially or emotionally, or simply those of us who are on our own. Or maybe it's because someone special isn't there this year. I mean, this sounds all a bit negative, but I do think there's a bit of that reality for many of us. But despite these challenges, Christmas is often the best time of year for most of us, and especially children. And despite these pressures, most of us do have a good time. We get to eat lots of food, which I know for some of us is the highlight, and connect with family and friends. But rarely is it a peaceful, chilled out time. So it's in this context we hear and celebrate the coming of Jesus, who is foretold in Isaiah as the Prince of Peace, as the one who will not only bring us peace in our hearts, but will bring us peace with others and peace with God for the whole of eternity. So we've got these verses coming up in a minute that we're sort of focusing on. The Sutton's very helpfully read out the first one. And we're also going to look at the second one as well, which talks about the Prince of Peace bringing us peace. And it says in Isaiah 54, verse 10, though the mountains be shaken and the hills be removed, yet my unfailing love for you will not be shaken, nor my covenant of peace be removed, says the Lord, who has compassion on you. So we see that Jesus is the Prince of Peace, and he's going to bring us peace. So if we think a little bit of the background of Isaiah, Much of Jesus' life is foretold. His birth, his life, and his death and his resurrection are all talked about in Isaiah. In fact, it's talked about so much that a lot of people, or a lot of scholars, call it the fifth gospel. Obviously, it's not actually a fifth gospel. It just has so many prophecies that are later fulfilled that they actually see it as almost a fifth gospel. So thinking about Isaiah and the time that this was written, it was about 700 years before Jesus was born, so that's quite a long time. Imagine predicting something that's going to be happening in 2720. It's quite a long time ahead. But it was a time and a message for the people at that time, but it was also a telling of the future and foretelling future events. And it was the reassurance that in their time of trouble, there was a Prince of Peace coming, and that he would bring peace at the end of all time when he brings his kingdom and a new heaven and a new earth. So what was it like when Isaiah was writing this? The Jewish believers had been divided into two kingdoms. There was the kingdom of Judah, which was in the south, and that included the city of Jerusalem. And then there was a separate kingdom, the kingdom of Israel, which was to the north. And by the time of Isaiah's writing or his life, most of the kingdom of Israel had been conquered and destroyed by the Assyrian army. Most of their people had been deported or scattered by the brutal military regime of the Assyrian army. Also, by this time, the southern kingdom of Judah had, for the most part, turned their back on God and were worshipping foreign gods. We see this at the beginning of Isaiah. But later on, about 130 years later, Judah is also conquered by the Babylonians, and Isaiah is predicting this will happen. Much of Isaiah is saying that this is happening because you've turned your back on God. And he's saying that God is doing this so that people will turn back to him. However, at the time of this writing, it wasn't a time of peace. And Isaiah is promising that God will restore them to their father and he'll bring peace. It won't necessarily be just a literal peace, but a freedom from oppression, both internal and external, bringing peace to our relationship with God and the Heavenly Father. It's in this difficult context of war and destruction that we see these wonderful promises of peace and of somebody coming to bring permanent peace. We see that he's saying that the Prince of Peace will come and the greatness of his government and peace will be no end. So if you're living under captivity, if you're living under a brutal regime, hearing that God is going to deliver you and establish a just kingdom, that he's all powerful, was probably very reassuring. And again, the second part was saying the mountains will be shaken and the hills will be moved and my unfailing love will not be shaken. Again, is a real blessing. The believers were under a great deal of pressure. Their world had been shaken. Everything had been shattered and destroyed. What hope did they actually have? What peace did they have? And similarly, when we look at the New Testament, when Jesus was born, again, it was a time of occupation. It was a time where the Jewish leaders were not only conquered, but were working alongside the invaders to promote themselves. And neither of these times is a time of peace and tranquility. People are under massive strain, yet it's in this context that God is firstly promising peace and secondly, the Prince of Peace. So we conclude from this that Jesus is the answer for us all. He is the peace in the storm. He's the foundation we can stand on in good times. And he is who we can cling on to in difficult times. And we just need to look to him and keep our focus on him. And sometimes that is so hard to do, especially if times are difficult or you're under a lot of stress. But we do find freedom and we do find hope and we do find peace when we turn to him. I'm going to tell you a story of a lady called Corrie Ten Boom. Some of you may have heard of her. There she is as an elderly lady and her as a young girl. But she was quite an amazing woman. She was a Dutch lady. She, along with her family, lived in Holland during the Second World War. and they lived under Nazi occupation. She, along with the rest of her family, refused to follow the Nazis' edict to betray the Jews and hand them over to the Nazi authorities. Instead, they chose to work with an underground movement which hid and helped Jewish refugees to escape out of the country and into safety. However, they were eventually betrayed, and her entire family that you see here were sent to a concentration camp because they refused to give up the Jews that they were hiding in that hole you can see up there. And Corrie ten Boom was actually the only one of her family that survived being sent to the concentration camp. Once the war was over, she would often go to different places and churches to preach and teach about the love of God and his protection of her. She was an amazing woman. And if you ever get a chance to read her book, The Hiding Place, or any of her other books, it's actually a really amazing read. You won't believe what she went through and how she trusted God. But one of the illustrations she used to share about the provision of God was about when she was a little girl. And she was really looking forward to her first train journey with her father. Her father had bought the tickets weeks before, and she was all excited, and she would regularly go to him to check to see if he still got the tickets. She'd get all het up that the tickets were going to get lost, and if she didn't check on them, who would check on them, and would that be all right? And her father told her over and over again not to worry about the tickets, and that he had them safe. However, Corrie was still worried and still anxious. She would later explain that the problem wasn't so much her dad or even that the tickets were going to get lost. Her problem, she realised, was her lack of trust in her father. Deep down, she did not believe that he would take care of everything. So she was worrying that he would lose the tickets. And when that time came for the trip, she was worried that they wouldn't have what they needed and they weren't going to be able to travel. And as a result, she lost the joy of looking forward to that journey because of her lack of trust in her father. So on the day of the train journey, her father did have the ticket and they traveled together as planned. But she just felt that she had wasted all that time rather than enjoying and looking forward to the journey. She'd often share that experience taught her about God and his provision for us. She would say that we often get so worried and anxious about the trials we face that we lose our peace and our faith in God to provide for us. She would go on to explain that God often gives us the ticket or the grace we need on the day we need it. He doesn't often give it to us before, but he also doesn't give it to us late. And God, of course, is much better at keeping us safe than we are. How much of your stress generally, especially at this time of year, is based on a lack of trust in God to provide for you? How much of our stress and worry is based on a deep down belief that our lives and our fate are in our own hands? If you can identify with that, maybe today during communion would be a good time to give that all to God, to say sorry in your hearts for not trusting him completely with your lives and asking him to give you that peace to flood your heart. When we look at the traditional Christmas story, I'll see a little image of that now. Christmas has come a long way and the pressure that we're under has come a long way. Jesus' experience in the stable was nothing really in comparison to the adverts that we saw. For example, his parents were the subjects of foreign invaders who were made to travel a long way whilst heavily pregnant to merely satisfy the Roman emperor's desire to know the extent of his influence and power. They had to give birth not in a clean bedroom or a well-prepared hospital room, but in a dirty stable surrounded by animals, mess and straw. With no midwife to help Jesus's mother, his mother was known as an unmarried mother, so he was conceived to an unmarried mother. Her fiancé had originally wanted to disown her, and the family first visitors were low-caste shepherds and travelling astronomers. And just days after he was born, they had to flee to Egypt, where they became refugees because of a genocidal king. Imagine what that was like to go through, especially when you've just given birth. And sadly, there's people even in Europe today that can identify that in a real way. So in many ways, the real Christmas is not really what we saw in the adverts and what they were selling at all. For example, it definitely wasn't the beautiful, bountiful setting we see each year. But in another sense, it really was. Because what the adverts are really selling isn't a product or even a shop. They are selling a sense of family, a sense of belonging, and a sense of care, and ultimately a sense of being home. And as followers of Jesus, Jesus in heaven is the ultimate place where we all belong. He is the source of our hope. He is where we will always be home for the rest of eternity. Paul in the New Testament many times reminds us that our true belonging comes from our faith and that we aren't citizens of this world, but we're actually citizens of heaven because Christ died for us. So I'm going to put the last slide up. There's one of the verses that talks about that. So whatever you're facing, we belong to something bigger. We belong to something eternal, and we belong to someone eternal. So in our stress and worry, we can conclude that Jesus is always the answer, and putting our faith in him first. He is our Prince of Peace, our Emmanuel, our God with us, and our everlasting Father. Wherever the mountains are in your life today, or whatever you are facing, God is bigger. His unfailing love for you will not be shaken. There's a really good children's story. I don't know if you've heard it. It's by Max Licardo. It's called You Are Special. And it's a really lovely story. If you've got children, it's nice to read it to them. But it's also good as an adult. And it's a really powerful story. It's about these little wooden creatures called Wimmocks, who are all created by this masterful carpenter. We can see a picture of them here. They generally spend their days going about town, showing off to one another, and comparing themselves with each other, giving out stars for the ones who are most clever, sporty, talented, or beautiful. But they also give out coloured dots to the Wimmocks who aren't as good as themselves. And in this story, we follow this poor little fellow, a little Wimmock who never gets any stars and is literally covered in dots and is often very sad about it. And the little Wimmock finally meets another Wimmock who doesn't have any spots or stars. And in fact, when another woman puts a star or a dot on her, it just slides off. Intrigued to find out why this was, the little woman asks the girl why she doesn't have any spots or stars on her. And she replies, "It's because I spend a lot of time with the carpenter." Eventually, the sad little woman meets the carpenter. And the carpenter explains that the reason the stars and the dots don't stick on the girl is because she spends a lot of time with her maker, and she knows that he cares for her and provides for her. So when the other Wimmocks put dots or stars, they just don't stick, because she knows what her maker thinks of her, and she knows where she belongs, and that's far more important. And although it's just a simple children's story, it's a good lesson for all of us. Whatever we're facing, whatever pressures we might feel under at the moment, when we look to Jesus and focus on him, all the other things in our life have less hold on us. They have less power. So it's important to remember that we are children of God. We are his and he is ours, and we belong to him. There is nothing he can't overcome, and he will give us all that we need at the time we need it. He has paid the ultimate price on the cross so that we can live in peace with God. And that is what Christmas is really about. Not what we've made it and the level of perfection we try to achieve or see in adverts. All the pressure to meet all the tasks and all the demands. Jesus is the greatest gift of all. Our debt of sin has been paid, and an eternity with peace in God lies ahead. In many ways, when you think about Jesus, the maker of the universe, the son of the Almighty God coming to earth as a baby, was probably the worst, most danger-filled plan of all in order for us to be united by God. I don't know if some of you remember the nativity we did a few years ago, and it was about a conversation in heaven between the angels about a plan of sending Jesus as a baby, and they weren't too convinced. But I do wonder what the heavenly host actually thought when God chose to send the Son of God to be a baby. But because he lived our life, because he lived it with the limitations, because he lived it with the pressures, because he knew what it was like to try, but he never failed. He never turned from his Father. And then by dying in our place and paying our debt, we can have that peace with God. So maybe at this Christmas time, let us make space to focus on this wonderful miracle of peace. Let us commit ourselves to reflect that there isn't anyone or anything that can take us out of his hands or can take this wonderful gift from us. In a minute, we're going to sing a song, Be Thou My Vision, which isn't very Christmassy, but I chose it because I think it's really good to sing as a declaration of our intent to put God first in all parts of our lives, in every situation we face, whether that's a difficult situation with a relationship at Christmas or not having enough money or the question of a job not working out. Just to make that declaration, to put Jesus as first in our hearts, whatever befall, to make him the first in our hearts and our priority at Christmas and in our lives. For it's when we focus on him and put him first that we truly know the peace in whatever we face.